Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Woodward for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from the Week magazine. Today, we're reading from the November 1st, 2024 issue of the Week. Our cover drawing this week features two ballot boxes. One is red, one is blue. And in front of each of the boxes is a long line of people. The line in front of the red box is circling back to the right. The line in front of the blue box is circling back to the left. And at the front of the red line is a man with a beard and a green hoodie. He's putting his ballot in. He's looking over at a woman in front of the blue box, looking back at him. She's got a T-shirt that says, "Abortion is health care." The headline is Battle of the Sexes, the Election's Unprecedented Gender Divide. That's one of our talking points story, and not surprisingly, a lot of the stories this week are political, including our first main story. Harris steps up attacks on unhinged Trump. What happened? With less than 2 weeks to go before Election Day, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris blitzed swing states this week in a bid to sway the few undecided voters who will decide the winner of a remarkably tight race. Trump trolled Vice President Harris, who says she worked at McDonald's while in college, by donning an apron for a staged event at a McDonald's in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The former president briefly worked a fryer and handed out food through a drive-through window. In a speech in Latrobe, Pennsylvania, which an aide said would outline his campaign's closing argument, Trump began with an extended riff on Arnold Palmer that included a celebration of the deceased golf great's genitalia. When he took showers with the other pros, they came out of there, they said, "Oh my God, that's unbelievable," he said. In Latrobe, the Republican nominee labeled Harris as shit vice president. In other appearances, he called her lazy as hell and slow. Harris sharpened her attacks on Trump, saying the Palmer anecdote and other odd behaviors show he is increasingly unhinged. "The American people deserve better than someone who actually seems to be unstable," she said. The Democratic nominee, 60, took aim at her 78-year-old opponent for backing out of interviews with NBC and CNBC's Squawk Box, which an aide told Politico was due to exhaustion. "If he's exhausted being on the campaign trail, is he fit for the job?" said Harris. While stumping for Trump, billionaire Elon Musk announced he would give away $1 million each day to a registered voter in a battleground state who has signed a petition drafted by his Political Action Committee. The Justice Department warned the PAC that the giveaways could be illegal, CNN reported. At a rally in Pennsylvania, the Tesla CEO made false claims about Democrats importing illegal migrant voters and said Trump's loss would be a permanent one-party state. Speaking in Wisconsin, Harris running mate Tim Walz called Musk a dipshit who is trying to buy an election. National polls show Harris and Trump effectively tied, and the pair continued to run exceedingly close across seven swing states, where they are even or separated by only a point. What the editorial said: "It's time to end the Trump era in American political life," said the Boston Globe. "Over the past decade, he's put his toxic stamp on the nation, denigrating the rule of law and sowing doubt about our electoral system. He's a convicted felon and a serial liar who's cozied up to foreign dictators while embracing anti-democratic ideas at home. Harris offers a different path. She seeks to lift the poor, working, and middle classes and offers a message of unity, hope, and aspiration that counters Trump's fear and loathing. The choice couldn't be clearer." Musk is generating the buzz he no doubt hoped for with his $1 million giveaway, said the Washington Post. But his legally dubious handouts distract focus from an even shadier effort to stoke doubt about the electoral system. He's spreading lies at rallies and on his X platform that voting machines are easily hacked and that as many as 2 million non-citizens are registered in swing states. Musk is laying the groundwork to cast doubt on the results and spur chaos if Trump loses. The dangers can't be ignored. What the columnist said. As Trump manned a fryer in a Pennsylvania McDonald's, the scene outside distilled the apocalyptic mood in swing states, said Sean McCreesh in the New York Times. The parking lot throbbed with hatred, fear, and neighbor suspicion of neighbor as a few hundred Trump supporters squared off against some 50 locals who'd arrived to protest. As the two camps screamed at one another about Project 2025, tariffs, and COVID vaccines, the toxic scene became a microcosm of this year's election. Vicious and absurd. Trump's rallies now feel like a fever dream, said Will Bunch in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It's a bizarre spectacle indeed when the Republican nominee exalts Palmer's penis before a family crowd or spends 39 minutes swaying wordlessly to music before a deeply confused town hall audience, as Trump did last week. But as his behavior deteriorates, this deranged, aspiring dictator still holds even odds of winning an election that may decide the future of democracy. A better opponent might capitalize on Trump's misstep, said Jeffrey Blehar in National Review. But Democrats are saddled with Harris. There's palpable frustration among party loyalists that polls are deadlocked and the initial amphetamine rush of her campaign is gone. But with a nominee who lacks even the slightest hint of electoral charisma, that sugar buzz was always going to fade. Harris' real problem is that she remains an unknown to many voters, said Jonathan Martin in Politico. Yet rather than set out her own positive vision for the future, she's spending the campaign's final days slamming her rival's well-known defects. What new voters are being won with denunciations of Trump's character? Trump's paradox is that he alternately comes off as a buffoon and a would-be dictator, said Zach Bocamp in Vox. One minute you're snickering at his campy dance moves, the next you're worrying he'll unleash troops on U.S. citizens. But the two Trumps, the clown and the menace, are intimately tied together. The buffoonery helps normalize his dangerousness. We laugh not only because it's funny, but also because amid the chuckles, for a moment at least, we don't have to confront the reality of what he truly represents. Controversy of the week. Trump, is he running as a fascist? For 9 disturbing years of Donald Trump's political career, his opponents have, for the most part, avoided publicly referring to the Republican as a fascist, said Steve Bannon in MSNBC.com. But last week, everything changed. First, news broke that retired General Mark Milley, Trump's hand-picked chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had called the former president a total fascist and fascist to the core in interviews with veteran reporter Bob Woodward. Within days, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and former House GOP conference chair Liz Cheney had seconded Milley's remark. Finally, Vice President Kamala Harris, asked by radio host Charlemagne the God if fascism fairly characterizes Trump's vision for the country, replied, "Yes, we can say that." Milley may have handed the Democrats a permission slip for using the F word, said Sasha Abramski in The Nation, but Trump's own rhetoric has become dramatically darker in recent weeks. He has threatened to jail election officials, revoked the licenses of less than fawning TV networks, and unleashed the military on Democratic opponents he calls the enemy within. Democrats should have done it months ago, but the belated decision to call a fascist is very welcome. This was inevitable, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. The left has hurled fascist at every Republican presidential candidate since the 1960s. With the polls deadlocked, it's hardly surprising that nervous Democrats have dusted off the fascist meme in the campaign's final weeks. But the public isn't buying it. Yes, Trump has recently made some grandiose and self-defeating statements, and his attempt to overturn the 2020 election was disgraceful. But he talked this way in 2016 as well, and voters don't recall any fascist takeover of America during his first term. This fascism panic has less to do with the factual record than with progressive panic at Harris' slide in the polls. John Kelly is no progressive, said Michael S. Schmidt in the New York Times. The retired four-star general was Trump's longest-serving chief of staff. This week, the fiercely private Kelly went on the record to state that Trump told him more than once that Adolf Hitler did some good things and that he wanted his generals to be like Hitler's, loyal to him, that is, and not the Constitution. In his own view, Kelly said, Trump certainly falls into the general definition of fascist. Trump barely tries to hide it, said Ann Applebaum in The Atlantic, when he talks about immigrants poisoning the blood of America or calls his political opponents vermin, Trump is intentionally echoing Hitler and Benito Mussolini. This fascistic rhetoric had a specific purpose. If you dehumanize your foes, then you can much more easily arrest them, deprive them of rights, exclude them, or even kill them. The mystery, said Jamel Bowie in the New York Times, is that we're not more alarmed. Trump is closing his campaign with an explicit promise to govern as an autocrat in an administration this time purged of the Milley and Kelly-like figures who resisted Trump's tyrannical impulses to seize voting machines and unleash the military on Black Lives Matter protesters. Yet many of us are sailing toward November 5th as if this were an ordinary election with ordinary stakes. There's no mystery, said Will Salatin in The Bulwark. We like to think that fascism can't happen in America, so we simply choose not to believe what Trump is telling and showing us every day, that it's happening right now. Here's our Good Week, Bad Week piece. It's a good week for cats, which outperformed 14-month-old human babies in a word association test. Cognitive scientist Soho Tagaki said not only was she impressed by the cat's ability to pair words with images, but also that it was cute to see how seriously they participated in the experiment. It was a good week for the hairless, after a Scottish employment tribunal ruled that an electrician whose supervisor called him a stupid bald is a victim of sexual harassment. As baldness is much more prevalent in men than women, the panel ruled, the supervisor effectively demeaned his victim based on the protected characteristic of sex. And it was a good week for efficiency, after New Zealand's Dunedin Airport instituted a time limit for goodbye hugs at its passenger drop-off zone in a bid to curb traffic jams. Max hug time, 3 minutes, read signs outside the airport's single terminal. For fonder farewells, please use the car park. But it was a bad week for Moby, after Danish conservationists found the detached penis of a young humpback whale washed up on a beach on the island of Bornholm. It was a different day at work, the conservationist posted online, adding that the 5-foot item was initially mistaken for a dead snake. It's a bad week for Rudy Giuliani, who was ordered by a federal judge to turn over his Manhattan apartment and a 1980 Mercedes once owned by Lauren Bacall to two former Georgia election workers who last year won a $148 million defamation case against the former New York City mayor. Finally, it was a bad week for Big Bangs, after the U.S. Forest Service announced that, due to dry conditions and a high risk of wildfires, it is pausing its practice of blowing up dead horses in the Wyoming backcountry. As explained in the USFS Field Manual, obliterating animal carcasses with explosives, blowing up dead horses makes them less attractive to grizzly bears. And short in other news piece here, FBI investigates leak of U.S. intel on Israel's plan to strike Iran. The FBI confirmed this week that it's investigating a leak of highly classified intelligence documents detailing Israel's preparations for a potential retaliatory attack on Iran. An Iran-linked account on the Telegram messaging app published the two documents last week, claiming they were supplied by a source inside the U.S. intelligence community. Dated October 15th and 16th, the documents include an analysis based on satellite imagery that suggests Israeli warplanes are readying for a major strike on Iran in retaliation for Iran's October 1st ballistic missile attack on Israel. The report also discussed the movement of munitions carts on Israeli airfields. While it is known that the U.S. regularly gathers intelligence on allies, including Israel, the leak has raised Israeli worries about the U.S. intelligence security. The content is not that significant, said one Israeli official. The fact that there was a leak is a lot more significant. The briefing this week is American Oligarch. Elon Musk holds enormous power over many critical industries. Is the government his next project? How big is Musk's empire? It stretches from Earth's orbit to tunnels underground and is even interlaced with human brains. Musk, the world's richest man with a net worth of nearly $250 billion, heads or controls six companies. The two largest are electric vehicle giant Tesla and the world's most valuable automaker, and SpaceX, which dominates the space launch business and operates more than 7,000 satellites, about two-thirds of all active satellites in orbit, through its Starlink satellite internet constellation. Their social media platform X, formerly Twitter, tunneling venture The Boring Company, brain chip startup Neuralink, and artificial intelligence firm XAI. This private empire has been helped by a substantial infusion of public money. Tesla and SpaceX had received more than $15 billion in federal contracts as of last year. But some officials and experts now worry that the government has become dangerously reliant on Musk, who has in recent years promoted racist and anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, interfered with U.S. foreign policy, and become an antagonist of the Biden administration and an ally of Donald Trump, giving at least $75 million to a pro-Trump super PAC. The government needs to cut at Elon Musk and his companies out of contracting, Trump critic and former GOP Representative Adam Kinzinger recently wrote on Musk-owned X. Why is the government so reliant on him? It wants to maintain a global edge in critical technologies, and Musk's companies have unrivaled capabilities. That became clear in June when glitches in Boeing's new Starliner spacecraft stranded two NASA astronauts at the International Space Station, turning an eight-day stay into 8 months. NASA has tapped SpaceX to bring them home next year. With no meaningful competition, SpaceX is now central to the U.S. space program. NASA in 2021 awarded SpaceX a $2.9 billion contract for its reusable Starship rocket. That same year, the company entered into a $1.8 billion classified contract to build a network of spy satellites for a U.S. intelligence agency, sources told Reuters. The issue for the government is, can they get a better service somewhere else, said James Andrew Lewis, an analyst at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. If the answer is no, you have to hold your nose and stick with Musk. But officials say that as Musk's power has grown, so has his hostility to any efforts to contain him. How has Musk pushed back? Faced with at least 20 recent investigations and reviews of his companies by federal regulators, Musk has tried to browbeat and sue officials into backing down. Officials with the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, which last week launched an investigation into Tesla's full self-driving FSD software over a string of deadly crashes, have reported that Musk screamed at them when they opened probes into his automaker. After SpaceX was accused by the National Labor Relations Board of improperly firing 9 employees in 2022, the company filed lawsuits aimed at declaring the NLRB's action and the board itself unconstitutional. He considers himself to be a master of the universe, said former Occupational Safety and Health Administration official Jordan Barab, and these rules just don't apply. X has proved to be a useful weapon in Musk's many tussles. How does he use X? Not as a moneymaker. Since he bought the platform in 2022 for $44 billion and gutted its content moderation system, it has lost nearly 80% of its value. But X does give Musk a megaphone to deploy against his perceived foes. He has used the platform to attack President Biden, a grim puppet for the Democratic Party, and Vice President Kamala Harris, literally a communist, and to amplify far-right conspiracy theories in the U.S. that Democrats are importing undocumented immigrants to vote in the coming election, and also abroad. In August, anti-immigrant riots erupted in Britain after 3 young girls were stabbed to death. The riots were fueled in part by viral false claims on X that the murderer, a 17-year-old British-born Christian, was a foreign-born Muslim. Musk appeared unbothered by the spread of misinformation, posting, "Civil war is inevitable," and accusing British Prime Minister Keir Starmer of failing to protect all communities. How else does his reach extend abroad? Musk has emerged as a key player in the Ukraine war. Pentagon officials were forced to plead with the mogul in 2022 after some Ukrainian troops lost access to Starlink, their main battlefield communication tool, while fighting Russian forces. Musk had previously demanded that the U.S. pay for Ukraine's Starlink access. A deal was later reached, and had endorsed a pro-Kremlin peace plan after chatting with Russian President Vladimir Putin. Musk's ties to China have also raised alarms. The country is Tesla's largest market after the U.S., accounting for 33% of all sales. Musk last year repeated Beijing's official line that the independent island nation of Taiwan is an integral part of China. Taiwan's foreign minister replied on X that Taiwan is not part of China and certainly not for sale. What are Musk's future plans? He recently unveiled a prototype for a self-driving cyber cab, which he claims will launch in 2026 and aims to put humans on Mars by 2030. Trump has said that if he wins the White House on November 5th, he will appoint Musk head of a proposed government efficiency commission. Musk could then target the very agencies that regulate his businesses. He has signaled wanting to go after irrational regulation at the FAA and the Environmental Protection Agency first, but has not said whether his company's subsidies will also be under consideration. "I look forward to serving America," Musk posted on X. "No pay, no title, no recognition is needed." Moving into the best columns. First two come from the U.S. Why America is moving rightward. Over the past 4 years, the American electorate has moved to the right, said Matthew Cottonetti. For proof, consider how Kamala Harris has jettisoned her Bernie Sanders-like position on energy, immigration, crime, and gender identity from her failed 2020 primary campaign while scrambling to rebrand herself as a pragmatic centrist. The social justice warrior, who once likened ICE to the KKK, now vows to hire more border agents, stop illegal immigrants, and shoot intruders at her home with her Glock. Her transformation is surreal. What happened? President Biden mistook his narrow victory as a mandate to govern like FDR, and his embrace of progressive policies on federal spending, immigration, student loan forgiveness, and gender ideology was a turnoff to independents, labor, Latinos, and black men. Today, polls show 55% of Americans want a decrease in immigration. On one issue, however, the electorate has moved left: abortion. The backlash to the Supreme Court overturning Roe is fueling the gender gap and could save Harris' campaign. If Harris wins, she will likely abandon her pose of centrism. But if Trump wins, he'll revive and intensify the resistance, and the country's rightward turn may be short-lived. Is Ozempic an addiction breakthrough? Could Ozempic solve America's most difficult drug problems? Asked Maria Solovitz. New study suggests that drugs used to treat diabetes and obesity, including Ozempic and Wegovy, may also ease the cravings of alcoholism and drug addiction. One recent study noted that people with opioid use disorder taking these drugs, known as GLP-1 receptor agonist, experienced an overdose rate 40% lower than those not taking them. Another study found the hospitalization risk for people with both type 2 diabetes and opioid use disorder was cut by 40 to 70% in patients taking Ozempic or Wegovy, compared with those taking older medications. Those statistics don't serve as causal proof, but they hint at the possibility of a breakthrough in addiction care. Some scientists think GLP-1 drugs make food and addictive substances less pleasant, while others believe they suppress desire or alter the point at which the body sends signals that it's had enough. We need more research, and for pharmaceutical companies to make the drugs affordable and accessible and fund the clinical trials needed to get approval for addiction treatment. It would be shameful not to find out as quickly as possible whether these medications help. This column comes from Ukraine. How realistic is Zelensky's peace plan? Volodymyr Zelensky is putting Western leaders on the spot, said Volodymyr Fasenko in New Voice. The Ukrainian president has announced a victory plan to end the war with Russia. That's really a list of demands. Admit Ukraine to NATO now and allow Ukraine's army to use Western missiles to strike deep inside Russia's borders. U.S. and European leaders have been reluctant to take these steps, fearing that NATO could be dragged into direct conflict with nuclear-armed Russia. But as Zelensky rightly said, Russia will resort to diplomacy only when it sees that it cannot achieve anything by force. If Ukraine can't shelter under the NATO nuclear umbrella, he warned, it might have to develop its own nuclear weapons. To sweeten the deal, he's promising that Ukraine won't only be a taker. After Ukraine's security has been achieved, he said, Kyiv will offer up its own army to defend Europe, replacing U.S. troops on the continent with Ukrainians. This clever proposal hedges against the possible victory of Donald Trump in the U.S. election. It will appeal to MAGA Republicans who want American troops to leave Europe and soothe Europeans who fear that a GOP-ruled U.S. will force such a withdrawal. Zelensky's nuclear talk is an empty threat. You could argue, of course, that the West owes us protection since we gave up our own nukes long ago. When the Soviet Union collapsed, it left us with the third largest arsenal in the world, some 1,900 strategic warheads. The U.S., Britain, and Russia pressured us into giving those weapons up in 1994 in exchange for now broken promises of security. But if we tried to resurrect our nuclear capability, everyone would interfere. They would block the borders, kill our scientists and engineers, and it would be prohibitively expensive. We'd be trading all our oil and half our bread for guns for generations to come. Forget the nukes, said Andriy Popov in Union. Talk of building nuclear bombs would bring us only isolation and sanctions. A more pragmatic strategy would be to simply use the Western conventional missiles we've been given to strike inside Russia without permission, and then ask the new U.S. administration for forgiveness. In fact, the rest of Zelensky's plan is just as far-fetched as his nuclear threat. The victory plan was always going to be a mirage. The best we can hope for is a peace plan, requiring us to concede as little territory as possible. Russia will probably be willing to withdraw from the Kharkiv, Zaporizhia, and Kherson regions, keeping control of Crimea and Donbass, if NATO agrees not to let Ukraine join the alliance or host NATO bases. Yet such a peace, while unfair to Ukraine, would still fail to placate Vladimir Putin, said Ihor N. Stelmach in the Kyiv Post. The Russian leader can't let even a truncated Ukraine survive because he views the war in civilizational terms. If Ukraine joins the West, it would encourage a similar movement within Russia. The only road to viable peace is by a total commitment to Ukrainian victory. We can only pray that the next U.S. administration understands that. Time for the last word, feature article, titled this week, Inside the Illegal Organ Trade. Desperate to reach Europe, a growing number of migrants are selling their kidneys to pay for passage, said Sean Colum in The Guardian. This is the story of one donor. They traveled at night for what seemed like hours, but it was difficult to tell. Jonas was blindfolded and drowsy from the Xanax he'd been given. He wasn't sure where he was, but he could smell salt in the air when the car stopped. Jonas heard Ali, the other passenger, wind down his window and light a cigarette. The driver sat motionless, breathing heavily. Several minutes passed in silence. Then Jonas heard a pinging noise. Someone's phone had received a message. The door next to Jonas was opened, and two men escorted him into a building. After they took off his blindfold, the men walked down a long corridor and took the stairs to the basement. There, Jonas entered a room where a man dressed in blue scrubs was talking to Ali, the broker who had brought him here. He assumed the other man was the doctor who would perform the surgery. Before Jonas could ask any questions, he was taken to another room where he was told to change into a surgical gown and wait for a medical attendant to prepare the anesthetic. As he waited, Jonas thought of his parents at home in Eritrea, his younger brother conscripted into military service, his sister destined to a life of servitude. He hoped his sacrifice would help them. The attendant came in. The needle scratched his arm. Fluorescent lights gave way to darkness. Jonas had made three attempts to reach Europe, twice from Libya and once from Egypt. But each time he was detained and forced to pay large sums of money, between $3,000 and $7,000 for his release. destitute and already heavily in debt, Jonas borrowed money from lenders in Cairo. He was under pressure from his creditors, who were threatening to call in their debts with force if necessary. But above all else, he was desperate to send money back to his family in Eritrea. Trapped in a spiral of debt, he traded only thing of value that he had, one of his kidneys. It is illegal to buy or sell an organ anywhere in the world, with the exception of Iran. Nevertheless, estimates suggest that about 10% of organs for transplantation come from illegal sources. Most cases, however, go unreported, so the true number is likely to be much higher. As a legal academic, I have been investigating the global trade of organs since 2014. Over the past 10 years, I have spoken to 43 people from Sudan, South Sudan, and Eritrea who sold a kidney out of economic necessity. In most cases, people were targeted by criminal groups because of their precarious status as asylum seekers, refugees, or undocumented migrants. Most were not paid what they were promised. Some were paid nothing. Jonas was conscripted into national service in Eritrea at the age of 14. He was sent for educational training at the Sawa Defense Training Center, a sprawling military complex in western Eritrea, notorious for its military-style discipline, physical punishments, and forced labor. "My brother was with me," Jonas recalled. "They tried to brainwash us. They don't want people to have political ideas, thoughts. I had to escape that place." One night in September 2012, Jonas made a break for freedom. His family had paid a smuggler to take him across the border into Sudan, and there was a truck waiting for him on the far side of the compound. To reach it, Jonas had to crawl on his hands and knees, under wire fencing and across jagged rocks, avoiding the searchlights sweeping from above. He knew that if he was caught, he would be shot. Outside an old garrison town close to the border, Jonas climbed onto another truck heading to the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. In Omdurman, the twin city of Khartoum, on the opposite side of the Nile, he was introduced to a smuggler who, he was told, could organize transport across the Mediterranean. The journey was expensive and dangerous, but Jonas felt he had nothing to lose. His family had given everything they had to help him escape Sawa. He was determined to make it to Europe and pay them back. Jonas had heard stories of kidnapping on migrant routes, but this smuggler had a good reputation, and Jonas was hopeful that he could make it. After a long and difficult journey across the Sahara between Sudan and Libya, Jonas was delivered to the Mediterranean coast outside Tripoli, as agreed. In April 2018, he was shoved onto a small boat along with about 100 other migrants. They were from different parts of Africa: Eritrea, Somalia, Sudan, South Sudan, Chad, and Nigeria. One of the passengers, with no experience of sailing, was handed the responsibility of manning the boat. After about an hour, the engine cut out. Men, women, and children sat helpless, dehydrated and fatigued, as the boat floated idly. 6 hours passed before the Libyan Coast Guard intercepted the vessel and took them back to the African mainland for processing. They were told they would be detained for attempting to enter Europe illegally. After the engine had cut out, Jonas recalled, the passengers thought they might die, and when the Coast Guard came, he said, "Some of us wished we had, because we knew where we were going." Libya's immigration detention centers, which are partly funded by the EU, are notorious. Detainees have been subjected to torture, harassment, physical violence, sexual exploitation, forced labor. In the absence of legal process, the only way to escape the punishing conditions of detention centers is to pay the officers a bribe. When the guards receive the money, they leave you in the desert. Then you just try not to get picked up again, Jonas said. Jonas had left some money with friends in Egypt in case of an emergency. He also had relatives living in Sweden, the Netherlands, and the UK who raised funds to help him pay his way out of detention in Libya. The money was sent to a Libyan bank account via Western Union, he said. He said he paid the prison guards around $7,000. After he was released, Jonas traveled to Cairo. By the time he had bought his way out of detention in Libya, Jonas had exhausted the funds he received from friends and family. Once in Cairo, he borrowed about $620 from lenders, a temporary measure, he thought, to cover the cost of food and accommodation while he searched for work. 2 months went by. Jonas could not find reliable employment, and he was unable to make any repayments. He knew that if he missed his next payment, there would be serious consequences. This guy told me he would take a tooth for every payment I missed. Jonas had all but given up hope of reaching Europe's shores when he was approached by a Sudanese man who gave his name as Ali at a street market in Cairo. Jonas told him his story. Ali said he knew a way that Jonas could pay back all his debts and secure a place on a more reliable fishing vessel crossing from Europe to Italy. He told Jonas he could sell his kidney, make a lot of money, and save a life in the process. Jonas had his doubts, but he had amassed significant debts trying to cross the Mediterranean, and he was coming under pressure to pay back friends, family, and moneylenders. "This is the last thing you want to do," he explained, "but for me, there was no other way." Ali, the broker, was personable and seemed genuine. Jonas agreed to the deal. He was promised $10,000 for his kidney. The money, he hoped, would be enough to cover his debts and pay for his onward journey across the Mediterranean. Around the world, the cost of a transplant on the black market ranges from $20,000 to $200,000, the higher price generally reflecting better treatment and care. The donor typically receives a fraction of this cost. The amount that they receive varies from country to country. In the Philippines and Colombia, impoverished farmhands and bonded laborers have been documented as receiving less than $2,000 for a kidney. In contrast, kidneys have been sold for between $10,000 and $20,000 in Israel and Turkey. In Egypt, a kidney can sell for anywhere from between $5,000 and $20,000. Patients or transplant tourists pay between $50,000 and $100,000 for a kidney transplant, including travel and accommodation. The price generally depends on market demand. For a kidney, the price paid to the seller can be anywhere between $5,000 and $20,000. Part of the broker's job is to find out just how wealthy the buyer is and to establish the absolute minimum the seller is prepared to accept. An impoverished, unemployed seller with no legal status is in no position to negotiate. For this reason, illegal migrants make valuable targets. A series of drawn-out conflicts in the region have supplied a steady flow of people whose desperation can be commodified in different ways. Bodies to be smuggled, sold, or harvested. Hakim, an organ broker I met in Egypt in 2020, said that he referred between 20 and 30 sellers a week, who are themselves referred to him by his contacts in Khartoum. They agree to the deal, the organ sale, in advance, and I call my uncle to receive them. After the operation, they continue to the coast to try to make the crossing, he said. Most, he said, don't make it across the Mediterranean. Jonas' surgery took place at a medical facility near Alexandria in November 2018. "I remember waking up and feeling confused," said Jonas. "The first thing Jonas was aware of was a buzzing noise coming from a loose light bulb, like the sound of a trapped insect. Next came pain, then fear, panic, anger. I was shouting as loud as I could. I just wanted to get out of there." Jonas rolled over and vomited onto the floor. Hours passed. Finally, the door opened and a man holding a clipboard came in. The man said that Ali would be coming soon, at which point he could leave. He handed Jonas 2 painkillers and a glass of water and slid out the door before Jonas could ask any questions. When Ali finally arrived, he told Jonas to get dressed. His voice was hard, all his old charm now gone. A nurse removed the drip attached to Jonas' hand, and 2 heavyset men escorted him back to the car. Jonas spent the next 2 weeks in an apartment in Cairo convalescing. He was closely monitored in case he should decide to leave the apartment. They did not want him to attract attention. If someone were to see him, they might report his presence to the police. Best to keep him hidden while he healed. Jonas had been promised $10,000, but he was given just $6,000 in notes. This would be just about pay off his existing debts, but it was not enough to cover the cost of smuggler's fees, $3,500, for the next stage of his journey across the Mediterranean. Jonas went to the police and reported Ali for trafficking. He was trying to explain that he had been deceived into selling a kidney when another officer entered the room. The second officer informed Jonas that it was a criminal offense to sell a kidney. He took out a notebook and asked Jonas for his identification papers. Jonas fumbled in his pocket, searching for documents he knew he didn't have. The officers joked Jonas didn't look like an Egyptian, remarking his dark skin and curly hair. If he was a refugee, they suggested, he should go and complain to the UNHCR. But maybe he wasn't a refugee. Maybe he was an illegal migrant. The second officer reminded Jonas that he could be arrested or deported for failing to produce his identification papers. Jonas was regretting going to the police. He looked around, nervously waiting for someone to speak. The second officer smiled scornfully and told him to leave. This was adapted from an article that originally appeared in The Guardian. We'll read one of the technology articles today. Starship, onward to Mars? Last week's Starship catch was a giant leap for mankind's quest to reach deep space, said Lauren Grush in Bloomberg. SpaceX's launch system still faces many daunting development challenges before it's able to head to the moon for NASA, let alone anchor Chief Executive Elon Musk's grander dream of carrying humans to Mars. But catching the spacecraft's massive rocket booster was a key hurdle. After propelling the Starship spacecraft to space, the largest booster ever created returned to its launch site on Earth, where two enormous metal arms caught it in midair. The ultimate plan is to be able to launch and reuse Starship fast enough that multiple rockets can be quickly sent up, carrying many tons of fuel and other equipment, then refuel some craft in orbit and send them off to deep space destinations like Mars. This was an extraordinary feat of engineering, said the Wall Street Journal in an editorial. The Super Heavy booster is taller than a 20-story building and weighs more than 200 tons. It's a reminder that America remains a nation of striving optimists. It's also a reminder of what Musk can achieve when he channels his energies into what he does best, said the Financial Times. Musk's talent is his readiness and ability to drill down into scientific detail, as well as an ability to imbue employees with some of his own relentless urgency. This is where he should put his focus, rather than on trolling elected leaders on X, or mulling a role as a government efficiency czar in a potential second Donald Trump administration. Musk's interplanetary vision seems to have been formed at an age when adolescents become enthralled by science fiction movies, said Michael Hiltzik in the Los Angeles Times. Time to grow up. What's the commercial incentive to reaching the red planet? Musk himself has estimated that the cost of making life on Mars a reality to be $1 quadrillion. That's 1,000 trillions. It'd be far cheaper to colonize the Sahara Desert or the bottom of the ocean. Money aside, what will we find on Mars when we get there? A barren landscape without water or breathable atmosphere, bathed in deadly solar and galactic radiation? You first, Elon. It might not be for you, but SpaceX was founded with the ultimate goal of enabling people to live on other planets, said The Economist. and how the firm is revolutionizing space travel matters for the rest of us, too. Starship could allow SpaceX to increase the capacity of its Starlink satellite communication system beyond anything previously feasible. There are also plans to use Starship to launch a new space station. It is tempting to see the recent launch as a culmination, but it really is just the start. And we had that Talking Point article referenced on the cover drawing. Gender gap, a critical factor in the election. It's boys versus girls this election day, said Rachel Gianfaza in the Free Press. The gender gap has grown into a gaping chasm, with pollsters predicting the largest difference in voting preference between men and women in modern history. Polls have found Kamala Harris winning by 14 to 16 percentage points among women, while Donald Trump was up by 13 points among men. The divide is most striking among young voters. Young women have moved significantly leftward since Trump's election in 2016 and the Me Too movement, and the demise of Roe v. Wade made it clear their bodies were part of the political battleground. Young men, meanwhile, feel the masculinity itself has been demeaned and demonized and are fighting for their dignity as they struggle with loneliness and economic stagnation. They hear Democrats making specific appeals to women and minorities, but not to men. It feels as if both candidates are speaking only to their own gender, leaving each at risk of alienating the other sex. Harris can't afford to cede the bro vote to Trump, said the Boston Globe in an editorial. He's targeting young men by appearing on the Manosphere's hottest podcast, like Joe Rogan's Where's Sports Talk, Ultimate Fighting, Crypto, and Politics Meet. Trump is even making inroads among black and Latino men. In 2016, 51% of men under 30 identified with or leaned toward the Democrats. Last year, it was just 39%. Trump, meanwhile, has made it clear he believes women are intellectually inferior, said A.B. Stoddard in The Bulwark, and calls Harris dumb and mentally disabled. To try to regain lost ground, he paternalistically promised women he'd be their protector and bizarrely called himself the father of IVF at an all-woman town hall. Most women aren't buying it. Trump's message to men, however, is working, said John Della Volpe in the New York Times. Polls show many Gen Z men are pessimistic about their roles and their futures in a fast-changing society, and Trump is systematically exploiting these anxieties by making them feel that their masculinity and future are under siege. His hyper-masculine message of strength and defiance is a masterclass in bro whispering. If Harris and the Democrats do not address men's fears head-on and offer a bold vision to restore their sense of purpose, the gender divide may transform the country's electoral math for years to come. And a few of the short notes. The number of migrants admitted to a hospital after falling from a 30-foot-high wall on the Mexico-California border rose 58% between 2023 and 2024, according to data from two San Diego-area hospitals. The facilities last year treated 629 people for severe fall-related injuries, including broken pelvic bones and heel bones. So far in 2024, at least 993 severe falls have been recorded. More American women now have tattoos than American men, 38% to 27%. About a third of all Americans have at least one tattoo, including 56% of women ages 18 to 29, and 53% of women ages 30 to 49. If Donald Trump's proposed tax cuts and tariff hikes are enacted, Social Security's trust fund will be depleted by 2034. 3 years earlier than the expected, triggering a 33% across-the-board cut to all benefits, according to the Nonpartisan Committee for a Responsible Federal Budget. The group found that Kamala Harris' plans would have no meaningful effect on Social Security. On the poll watch, we have 31% of Americans have a great deal or fair amount of trust in mass media, the lowest percentage since 1972. 69% say they don't have very much trust or any trust at all. 34% of Americans, including 13% of Democrats, 30% of Independents, and 61% of Republicans agree with Donald Trump that undocumented immigrants are poisoning the blood of the country. And we will finish out today's show with a quote from Abraham Lincoln, who says, "The trouble with too many people is they believe the realm of truth always lies within their vision." With that, we have run out of time for today's episode of the week. We hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen again next time. This is Fred Woodward for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The week is available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. For more information or if you have comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.